You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle with Geoff in Lincoln. Matty Owen Sr. is in the middle of some very important meetings on the golf course and will be unable to join us today. Hey, Common Fans, you can now get 25% off beef purchased at cpbeef.com using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, Common Fan. Certified Piedmontese is premium Nebraska beef, and they've got everything you need. From top-notch steaks to mouth-watering ribs to juicy burgers and more, Certified Piedmontese has it all. Stop by your local Mercado Butcher Shop in Lincoln or Omaha, or get 25% off at cpbeef.com using promo code COMMONFAN and get Certified Piedmontese products shipped right to your front door anywhere across all 50 states. Certified Piedmontese, powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. Make sure to check out our brand new website, also Common Fans, www.commonfan.co. We went to TS Web Services to build the site for us. Their team of experts provides top-notch solutions tailored to your needs. Whether you need web development or hosting, they've got you covered. You can trust TS Web Services to take your online presence to the next level. We had a great experience working with their team. They were very responsive and delivered high-quality work. TS Web Services can help improve, redesign, or host your website. Check out tswebservices.com to learn more, and you can see a great example of their work at commonfan.co. Our guest today is a Nebraska Football Hall of Famer. He played for the Huskers from 2002 to 2006. He was a first-team All-Big 12 defensive lineman. He was a first-round pick in the 2007 NFL Draft and played 8 years in the NFL. He now hosts Carriker's Chronicles and the Big Ten Show, both popular YouTube shows. And he is just a phenomenal prognosticator and aggregator of so many Husker football sources. You can find all his great work on CarrickerChronicles.com. Very proud that the Common Fan podcast and a newsletter and, you know, all of our episodes and written articles can be found on CarrickerChronicles.com now as well. We are, of course, talking about Husker legend Adam Carriker. Adam, thanks so much for joining the Common Fans today.
I appreciate you having me, and I'm so glad you guys are a part of the site that we're doing, CarrickerChronicles.com. You guys do a phenomenal job. You've done several podcasts, a series that you actually let me know about way before the summer started, and you released them over the course of the summer.
Yes, sir.
Whether it be Bo Pelini, Mike Riley, Scott Frost. Okay. And you guys had some great thoughts and great guests doing those shows too.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah.
The
Reckoning series, check it out, Common Fans, if you haven't already. That one was really thoroughly enjoyable to do and kind of therapeutic too. I think we needed it a little bit. It was a little bit painful at times, but helpful. Hopefully Common Fans can check that out before the season, because once we get into the season, we're turning the page and we're going to be, Husker football will be back to greatness sooner rather than later. Speaking on that note, Adam, there's been a lot of conversation recently about, so there's this video of Coach Rhule at the open practice. There's fans in attendance and he's kind of chewing out the team. And he talks about, hey, you guys do things differently when there's people watching, and he wasn't saying that in a good way. I guess a fight had broken out at practice. Guys were not doing things the way they were being coached to do them. And he had this line. He said, you can't change your shot when the game is on the line. Basically, you got to practice the same way all the time. And he called out some guy. He called out Jamari Butler. He called out Ty Robbins. He called out some guys by name, some of the older guys. I'm guessing that was intentional. And then he closed practice, and he gave a press conference answer about why he was closing practice. And he kind of said, you know, he wanted to get guys focused and making sure they were repping and doing things the right way. You had some comments on this on Twitter, and you know, you kind of said, don't read too much into Matt Rhule closing Nebraska's practices. And I think our default, we love Matt Rhule on the show. We're drinking all the Rhule-aid, and our default is certainly
Betcha.
to trust Coach Rhule, right? But it seemed counterintuitive to say, you guys do things differently when people are watching. And this he said he was like, this is why we lose. And he said, well, I'm not losing this year, so you got to get it together, basically, was the message. But then you would think, so let's put it to the test and make them do things right in front. Like, pretty soon they're going to be playing in front of 90,000 people. So what do you think is the thinking behind closing practice, which seems a little bit counterintuitive to the message of you're not doing it right in front of people? So it's almost like you're shielding them or protecting them a little bit. What do you think about that, Adam?
I thought of that as well. I was like, well, if you can't do it in front of a few hundred, maybe a couple thousand, how are you going to do it in front of 90 plus? And then God knows how many watching on TV. And then Colorado's going to be here and America's going to be watching. Like, it's two parts. Number one, I think there's something to be said for you have to be able to do it right to begin with before you can add to it. It's like I'm starting to train my eighth grade daughter, Addison, in weightlifting. She's been asking me for 2 years. Okay. And she's always played so many sports. I'm like, I'm not going to throw weightlifting on top of this. I want you to have an actual childhood. She's narrowed down her sports. She's going into eighth grade. She's like, Dad, I'll be in high school in a year. I'm like, all right, cool. And so I'm not just going to throw, hey, you're going to start maxing out on clean, squat, bench. That'd be ridiculous. You got to be able to just do a kettlebell squat first. And can you do a body weight lunge? And can you do these things? So I think Matt Rhule's kind of taken the approach of number one, you got to be able to do it right consistently to begin with. Anybody can be good now and again. As long as you got some talent, you can be good, then go up, then go down. There's a certain level of expectation, and you've got to be able to do that day in and day out to start with. I can't help but wonder if part two was almost like you got to earn the right to be in front of fans, because I don't think he has any reason to punish fans or punish the press or anything like that. I think it's like, you got to show me you can do it right, and then we'll let the fans in. Now they're gonna come August 31st, no matter what, but we got some time before then. So I think it's really setting a tone, sending a message. I think the other thing Husker fans need to keep in mind, I think and it's easy to get sucked into, look at the experience on the O line, and Donovan Raiola is going into his third year. We got a five-star quarterback, and we don't know who the running back's going to be, but we got four really good ones. And we brought in all these transfers at wide receiver and Thomas Fedoni and Borkashir at tight end. And then we got the number 11 defense in the country with the coordinator and all these starters coming back. Why can't we be top five, top three? It's easy. I'm not saying that can't happen. It's easy to get sucked into that. But you got to remember, we haven't won our first game of the year since 2019. We haven't won enough games to go to a bowl game since 2016. And the last time we had a chance to go to a bowl game, we said thanks, but no thanks. Topic for another day. Sorry, I brought that up. So it's one of those things where we got to be able to do it consistently, day in, day out. There's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, and we're still just going into year two. Guys who played under the previous regime, not trying to say anything negative, obviously things didn't go well. Obviously, they didn't go well for a reason, and that's what they know. And so it's going to take more than just a little over a year to break some of those habits and build new ones, especially when it's hot, when it's humid, when you're tired, when you're exhausted, and when people are watching. And so for me, I'm as excited as anybody for this season, but I will still say, I gotta see it. I gotta see. We don't know what we're gonna get from a true freshman quarterback. We haven't had a legit good old line for a while. Who the heck is gonna be the running back? We got all this talent at receiver, but none of them have ever done it at Nebraska. I do think it's very reasonable to have high expectations of the defense, although we didn't play a ton of top offenses last year. So what happens, although we don't play a ton this year either, maybe USC, Colorado, Ohio State, three, that's really it. And so it's one of those things where I try to look at both sides of the coin, and it's still a process. It's a day in and day out process. And sometimes it's hard to do it when you're exhausted, you're tired. It's easier to just swing at the guy across from you, and it's easier to go sit down, which he talked about some of the seniors sitting down. And by the way, he said seniors, guys who've been there under a different culture. So those are some of the things that.
That's helpful perspective, especially that last big picture point you made. Because that's kind of the creeping thought. There's so much optimism in this offseason. And then to see that, it's like, oh geez, here we go. Like we haven't shaken that yet. We're still doing things the old way. I thought we were over that. I thought everybody wanted to get to a bowl game this year. But obviously, like you say, I think winning's a habit just like losing is a habit. And so breaking some of those bad habits and doing things different ways, like you said, process is probably the best word for it. You got to do it every day, not just when you feel good, not just when it's 75 and sunny and breezy, but when it's 100 degrees and humid and when it's raining, and you got to do it every day. So
it's funny because, and I'm prone to doing this too. You pull up Nebraska's schedule, and I've watched people do it. I've watched Joel Klatt do it. I've watched some other national pundits do it. They'll go through our schedule and they'll give their record prediction for Nebraska. UTEP, win. Colorado, going to be tough. Colorado's a giant disaster. Win. Actually, they'll use the word check. That means win to them. Northern Iowa, check. Illinois, check. Purdue, check. Rutgers, check. Indiana, check. And they're like, oh, you got a true freshman, so I'll give myself a mulligan. Nebraska be 6-1 after seven games, which, by the way, is also my prediction. But I'm not just like, check, 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 check.
Right.
I'm like, Indiana's going to be better than people think. Okay, they really are. And that's a road game. Rutgers is a team I think will end up in the top 25. Part of that is because they don't play Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, or Iowa. So part of that is schedule. I look at Purdue, and game five, that's going to be Dylan Raiola's first road test of his college career. I look at Illinois, Brett Bielema. A couple years ago, they were looking pretty good. Can he get them back on the same trajectory? We better beat Northern Iowa, with all due respect. Colorado, I don't know what to expect of that team. No freaking clue. They could come out, and they could come out blazing, or they could come out. I got a couple of puns in my head, and they involve guns, so I'm gonna leave that out of this. But it's kind of like, are they going to shoot themselves in the foot? I'll go with that pun. Okay, you don't know what's going to happen. UTEP, I mean, they're going to struggle this year, first-year head coach, but it's still the first game of Dylan Raiola's young career. So for me, I do think we can be 6-1, but I don't sit here and just go check, 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 like I'm just checking off my grocery list at the grocery store. There's a lot more that goes into it.
Yeah, makes sure. Sense.
Well, you spent a lot of time just on the beginning, just talking offense, but you're the expert here, and that's why we have you on. So let's talk defense for a second. Anybody can see the immediate impact that Tony White has had on this defense in year one. It's very apparent. Is that because of the 3-3-5 scheme at this time that he runs? Is it the culture, tackling more in practice, all of the above? If you can pinpoint one thing, what do you think that is, or all?
I think it is all the above, but if I were to rank them, I would say number one, I think Tony White's a really good coach. Number one, coaching matters. It's a big deal. So I think you start with culture. I think Tony White is a guy who knows how to relate to players, which is why they bought in so fast to a completely and utterly different scheme. And I think he's a good coach. I think the culture, I mean, he wants them to be the number one defense in the country. I've heard him say it multiple times. That's what he demands from them, and they demand of each other. And I always felt like the defense bought in sooner last year than the offense did. If you just watch practice, there were times when there was a particular practice, and I think it was early on, maybe even before the first game, I could be wrong, where Rule actually said, you're done with practice today, to the first team defense. And the defense came back like, no, we're not done. And it actually happened a couple of times. They kept coming back. And so I felt like the guys on defense bought in a little bit sooner. There's more veteran guys over there, although the defensive line was a huge question mark last year. Okay. Obviously not this year, but I feel like they bought in sooner. A lot of that has to do with Tony White. A lot of that has to do with the culture. I've sat in on their defensive meetings. I mean, I've watched Nash Hutmaker look at some of the young guys in the room and tell them to shut the F up because they weren't paying attention in meetings enough. And that's phenomenal. That doesn't always happen. I think tackling, we have struggled with tackling for so long. I mean, our tackling was so much better last year. I mean, it goes without saying.
Oh, yeah.
If it's one-on-one and you bring the guy down versus you miss him, it could be 5 more yards. It could be 50. I mean, so the tackling was a big deal. I almost put that number one, but I feel like culture blends into tackling. Number three, the 3-3-5 scheme. It's so funny, man, because for years I've always said, I don't care. People would ask me 4-3, 3-4, 3-4, 4-3. What do you like? Don't care. I've seen them both win national championships. I've seen them both win Super Bowls. And then I'd make the joke, just don't be 4-2-5 or 3-3-5, and I'm good with it. And that was the joke I would make. Although 4-2-5, depending on the conference, especially the Big 12 back in yesteryear, actually was pretty appropriate. And that's what Nebraska ran in 2009 in the Big 12. But a typical, like Big 10, I wouldn't have thought 4-2-5. When I found out we were running 3-3-5, I was like, all right, I better educate myself a whole lot more on this. And I think with the 3-3-5, if you can play fast and you can play physical and you can just keep the offense on their heels. I played against offensive linemen who said the 4-3 was tougher. Talking about 4-3-3-4, I couldn't help but notice they weren't the most athletic offensive linemen. They were more smart. So the one-on-one matchup that a 4-3 defense presents didn't suit their strength. A lot of offensive linemen, the more athletic ones or ones who played longer in the league, would say 3-4 because they could match up one-on-one in a 4-3 better with the D lineman pass rushing. But the 3-4 is so complex and you can do so many things and everything looks the same. All of a sudden you're blitzing, you're not. It's the other way. Now you're dropping, now you're stunting, now you're a straight rush. And so I think the 3-3-5 is that with speed. And so the question I always had was, could you stop the run with the smaller bodies? And what I love that Matt Rhule said to start out the year was Nebraska used to run such a complex option scheme. Okay. It was simplistic, yet it was complex to prepare for, that trying to do it in a week, so hard, almost impossible, because it was so unique. The 3-3-5 is very complex. Okay. Especially for an offense trying to prepare, and it's hard to do it in a week. And when he said that, I was like, all right, I can kind of get behind that a little bit, but I want to see how you do against the run, and I want to see how you tackle. And they stopped the run well, better than they stopped the pass, actually, and they tackled well. And so for me, I do think the 3-3-5 matters because it's unique. It's different. I've always thought Nebraska has things about it that were unique and different, and we kind of let those go by the wayside. They were more offensive than defensive. Anytime Nebraska can be unique and can be different, it can be challenging for other teams, especially teams who maybe, not many, but there's a few who have higher recruiting rankings, so to speak. Well, that's how you can kind of get that edge. And the 3-3-5 was originated from coaches who had teams who couldn't match up physically with other teams. To be clear, Nebraska's a lot more physically talented than those teams were, but that's where it originated from. And so I've slowly actually become a believer in it, and I like it myself. So I would put a third, but I do think it makes a difference, the scheme.
That's awesome. I think one of the other reasons probably that we have high expectations for the defense, I would say, is just by and far the large number of veterans on the team that are returning. You got Polar Bear, you got Ty Robinson, you got Isaac Gifford, Jamari Butler, John Bullock. We go on and on. Who is the one player on the defense you're really excited to watch this year, and one player that maybe isn't getting as much buzz and who might break out this year?
Well, my favorite player on this entire team is Isaac Gifford. And that really stems from watching him play, his style of play, but then meeting him and interviewing him at Big Ten Media Days. First off, the hair is phenomenal. how do I not factor the hair into this? It's phenomenal.
You have to.
He's got to be on the Big Ten all hair team.
Dude, for sure. Yeah. But it's funny because certain people just carry themselves kind of in a certain way. And that can apply to life or business, but I'm talking in a football sense. Like Brandon Ragone, if anybody knows who he was my teammate, mm-hmm. came in the same year I did, walk on, local Lincoln kid. He just carried himself like, I'm just going to run through you. Like he just every day, I'm just going to run you over and I'm going to run through you. And he was the smallest guy on the team. And then he played exactly like that. And then some. I remember doing an Oklahoma drill one time and I was watching the guys on offense. And if Brandon wasn't in the drill, they wouldn't hesitate to get in the drill. The moment he was in the drill, all of a sudden where the offense is like short a player or short two players. Like what's going on? Where is everybody? So Isaac Gifford kind of carries himself like that. He's got the same kind of demented look in his eye, and I mean that in the best possible way. And then at Big Ten Media Days, we're talking to him, and he starts talking about the physicality. It's just something as simple as a pulling guard. He talked about just coming downhill and spilling him and hitting him on the inside shoulder, and his eyes just lit up, and I just saw the intensity. And so for me, Isaac Gifford is the guy I'm looking forward to watch the most. As far as a potential breakout player, there's so many guys on this team that are well known, okay, on the defensive side of the ball. MJ Sherman is a guy to keep your eye on. Javon Wright, I mean, I would love to hear Stephon Thompson's name at some point, mentioned as a potential starter. That was my expectation, everybody's expectation when he transferred. I want to see that. The guy I actually expect, and it's weird to say him as a breakout player because he's actually played a lot of ball at Nebraska, but I think he's going to take his game to the next level, which is going to be why he breaks out, and that's Tommy Hill. This is a guy with first-round talent. And what Chenander did not suit his skill set necessarily. It was a little bit more complex, whereas Tommy's very naturally gifted. Just let him do his thing. Let him cover man-to-man and keep it simple for him. And I think what Tony White does is a little bit more up his alley, and I think he's ready to, like, take his game to the next level potentially this year. And frankly, we need him to.
Yeah. And I think a lot of folks are expecting that from Tommy Hill. I'm curious. That's interesting you brought that up. I'm curious. One of the few areas that feels a little bit uncertain on the D is that cornerback spot opposite of Tommy Hill. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pretty sure there's no relation, but transfer Bly Hill was kind of the leader in the clubhouse. He got hurt in the spring game. He's back now. It looks like he might be ready to play sooner than we thought. There's Sayar Wright, that transfer from USC. There's a ton of young guys. I know Caleb Benning's getting a ton of chatter and talk, a true freshman, Caleb Benning. Curious who you think might emerge as the starter there, or maybe there's some multiple guys. Maybe there's a rotation. What do you think?
Caleb's an athletic kid to keep your eye on. I always say you never know what you're going to get out of a true freshman, so we'll see. But he's definitely got a bright future at Nebraska. Bly Hill is a guy that when healthy, he's the other guy, I do believe. Zaire Wright is someone we needed to come. Like, we needed another corner, especially after Ethan transferred over the summer. So I think Bly, when healthy, can be the other guy. We just don't know exactly what he's going to look like early on in the season. Zaire Wright is a guy who started at USC. He's played a lot of football there. He was in the Space Jam movie, so anytime I hear his name, I just think Space Jam. I don't know what that matters with when it comes to playing football, but he's a guy that we really need to kind of step up on that opposite corner spot. Malcolm Hartzog can obviously move there, but there's a reason the coaches don't want to move him there. I've never actually specifically asked them about it, but anytime they don't have to put him at corner, they put him at safety every chance they get. So I should just ask him. There's got to be a reason. Because physically, he fits a corner spot perfect, but there's some sort of reason they don't want to put him there. So I should ask him at some point. But those are kind of the guys that stick out to me. Mario Buford is a freshman. Maybe keep your eye on him potentially as well. So those are the guys at this moment in time. And we'll see what actually happens, though.
Yeah. Well, expectations are certainly sky high. And I'd argue, I know you already alluded to it at the beginning, just, you know, like you said, show me and I'll believe it type thing. But I think that expectations for 2024 are even higher than what they were in 2019. And there's a ton of similarities between the two seasons. But as a fan base, it seems like it used to be, let's just get to a bowl game. That's what we need. But just in one off season, I feel like already we've moved from let's just get to a bowl game to things that are higher than that. So I get the sense that most fans would be disappointed with 6-6 this year. I think that's the consensus that a lot of us have come to. What's your prediction for the Huskers' final record? And do you think it's reasonable as far as expectations go?
It's crazy because when you talk about not being to a bowl game since 2016 and now, and that was the whole goal last year. I went on my show 8 million times and said, just get to a bowl game and I'll consider this a successful season.
We did the same thing. We did the same thing.
You got 4 games left and all you got to do is win one. Obviously that doesn't happen. Ugh. And it's just demoralizing and frustrating. And you're 5-7 again. There's a lot of talent that's come in. There's a lot of guys who've come back. As we know, Nebraska has the most amount of returning production of any team in the Big Ten, one of the best in the country. So when you factor in the amount of guys coming back, when you factor in the transfer portal guys, and it's not like Rule leans on the transfer portal, like Coach Prime just lives in the transfer portal. Like Rule doesn't lean on it, certainly doesn't live in it. He's just like, hey, we need some help at guard. Let's get Micah Mazzucca. We need some wide receivers. Let's do that. We need certain spots where we need help. Let's do that. He's not one of those guys that's just going to bring in a whole wave because he wants to be loyal to his guys, because he wants them to be loyal to him so they can stay, they can develop, they can get better. His big thing is development, which is a challenging thing to do in today's college football. And so for me, I feel like when you, and then you get Dylan Raiola, the five-star quarterback, I'm going to keep reminding people he's a teenager and a true freshman. He's as ready to play game one as I've ever seen a pass first quarterback. There's been some option quarterbacks. Like I remember when Adrian started his first game as a true freshman, you know? And so there's been some other guys along the way, Adrian Martinez, other guys along the way that are more run first type quarterbacks. When you look at the history of college football and they start right away and they do pretty good, it's harder to do it as a pass first guy, which obviously Dylan is. I don't think I've ever seen a pass first quarterback as ready to start game one of his college football career as Dylan Raiola is. He's still a teenager and we still don't know what to expect from a true freshman, but just all of that gets people excited. And it's hard for me not to get sucked in, you know? And then my whole soliloquy earlier where I was like, well, what do we actually have at receiver? Has the offensive line, have they actually found a way to gel, you know, all that stuff. And I think that's what makes the season so fun is the ability to win 7, 8, 9 games is there. We've also got to see it because we know what the other end of the spectrum and that frustration feels like all too well. I think for me, what really helps is you do look at this schedule. You look at the first 7 games. Nebraska is going to be, should be favored in all of them. Every single one of these games, they should be favored. Whether they win or not, we'll see. I do predict 6-1. Okay. After the first 7 games, I have them beating UTEP. Check Colorado. No, I'm just kidding. I do think that Colorado game is going to come down to the wire. I think it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. And if Nebraska can get that win, I don't want to say that's the pivotal game of the season, but the momentum that that would create is ginormous. It's not even a conference game, but the momentum would be huge, especially after 3 straight times in a row losing to the Buffs. The first 2 of those games, we really should have won, if you remember them.
Yes.
And then you look at Northern Iowa, the 3rd game, Illinois, people don't have high expectations of. Those first 4 games are all at home. Then you go to Purdue, who is preseason predicted to be the worst team in the Big Ten. Yes, it's a road game, but they're the – see how I can talk out of both sides of my mouth here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's like I try to look at the whole picture. I try to avoid looking at the part of the picture that I like and ignoring everything else. I try to look at the whole picture. And you look at that Purdue game, preseason, supposed to be the worst team in the Big Ten. But it is Dylan Raiola's first road game. I do genuinely believe Rutgers is going to be a good team. I think they're going to be a top 25 team. Again, they avoid the 5 of the best teams in the entire Big Ten, certainly probably the top 3 in Oregon, Michigan, Penn State, then Wisconsin and Iowa are usually pretty good, 8, 9, 10 win teams, and they avoid all of them. But there's like one person in the history of planet Earth who can win at Rutgers, and he's there coaching right now, and that's Greg Schiano, and he's doing it again.
Right.
They're going to be hard-nosed. They're going to be physical. Okay. Their quarterback, Keithan Alec McManus, easy for me to say, struggled at Minnesota last year. Maybe a new home will do him good. I don't know. We'll see. And then you go to Indiana, and I do think Indiana is going to be better. It's on the road, but we'll be favored in all of those games. You look at Ohio State, we're going to be a big dog. So let's say we're 6-2. Even the last 4 games, there's not a game I look at and I'm like, ah, we're going to be a huge underdog no matter what happens. Like UCLA comes to Lincoln. That's a team, they got more question marks than we do.
They might not be very good this year.
They might
not be.
And honestly, they got a really tough schedule. I just, on my Big Ten show with Rhett, we actually broke down USC and UCLA. And first of all, they have a lot of names on that roster that I cannot pronounce. And I Googled and I practiced and Rhett still had to help me. And I hope I did those names justice. But we get them at home. USC, they're a team that they're like a gigantic question mark to me. I don't think their offense is going to be as good, but it's going to be good. But can their defense be, you know, not awful?
Right.
So that's interesting to me. It's a road game. I have us beating UCLA, probably not USC, but who knows? I don't know what to expect out of Nebraska in certain areas. Same thing with the Trojans. So what does that put us at? 7-3. And then Wisconsin and Iowa, always close games, always hard fought, always come down to the end, almost always like physical. You think back to Wisconsin's game last year. I'm just going to be honest. Matt Rhule didn't manage the end of that game very well. Oh, dare. Somebody didn't say something 1,000% positive about Matt Rhule. Mismanaged that game, and we ended up losing. Could have won. And Iowa, always comes down to the end, overtime, last second kicks. We go to Iowa City 2 years ago, get the win. Man, it'd sure be nice to go back and beat them 2 out of 3 times, especially twice in Iowa City. I think we split those. How do you predict those games? They always come down to the end.
Yeah.
I think we split those. I got us at 8-4. I'd be thrilled. So the 6-6 thing, it's like the bare minimum. That was your original question. Then I went on this long soliloquy. That, it's like the bare minimum. And Matt Rhule's even looked at me and said, if we don't win 6 games, we got real problems.
Yeah.
I think Husker fans, if we go 6-6, can say, hey, we finally made a bowl game. We've done something we haven't done and bordering close to a decade. All right, we can live with this. It's small progress, but we'll take it. We got a bright young stud, a quarterback. The future's bright, et cetera. And people would be okay with that. They don't want to hear it right now, but in the moment, I think that they would be like, all right, you know, this it's okay. 7-5, I'd be happy with that. 8-4, I'd be thrilled. Anything beyond that, my gosh, I'm going to start dancing on this desk. And so for me, I've got us at 8-4, and we'll see what happens.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
You have time for maybe one or two more, Adam?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, great. Thank you. So just kind of, we talked a little bit about the grind of fall camp. I'd just love to get this, your perspective as a former player. We're so close to game day. We're roughly 2 weeks from game day, but I'll bet that feels like a long time for the players going through it. Certainly still feels like a long time for the fans who are frothing at the mouth, ready for football. It's like, what are they going through right now? You know, and as a player, I'm sure every team struggles with this, even the best teams. How do you stay sharp and focused? You're battling the heat. You're battling the humidity. You're battling your teammates. There's no game in sight. You know, it's like the dog days of camp. Like, what's that like, and how do you battle through that?
By far, my least favorite part of football was camp. Training camp, fall camp. It's hot. It's humid. They don't do two-a-days anymore, but we did two-a-days. And then I'll never forget when the NCAA got rid of back-to-back two-a-days. So my true freshman year, it was Monday through Saturday, two-a-days, you had Sunday off, and then you did it again. My redshirt freshman year, Pelini's first year as defensive coordinator, they got rid of back-to-back two-a-days, but they also got rid of the mandatory day off. So we'd have two practices, 1-2-1, 2-1, 2-1. I kept track. We went 22 straight days without a day off. I'm like, can we go back to two-a-days with the day off? Like, this is brutal.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, my gosh. I'll never forget some of the leaders on the defense. I'll keep their name out of it. But if I said the names, people would recognize them. Went to Pelini, and they're like, Coach, you got to help us. Like, these are tough guys. These are not soft individuals. And I was just like, yes. Preach, this is brutal, because I'm a freshman, ain't nobody listening to me. So I was living through them, and I remember the meeting like it was yesterday. We were sitting down to watch film. We did not have a good practice, and it was ripe. Like, normally he would have ripped into us like a monkey on a cupcake, but he was actually a little bit nicer to us watching this film, I think, because he actually was like, yeah, this has been brutal. One of our assistant coaches on defense, an individual who was an All-American at Nebraska, played over a decade in the NFL, who hardly ever talks. So one of the quietest guys I've ever met. How free are you with language on this show?
We try to be a family friendly show. So okay. Just no F-bombs. No F-bombs, please.
No F-bombs. P-bombs? Can I say P-bombs?
Yeah, sure.
Get loose with it.
Basically just got up in front of the whole defense, called us pussies. Said, you're a bunch of pussies. This is nothing. And I looked at him and I said, crap. You know what you're talking about, so I can't argue with this. So for me, that was always my least favorite part. But it's kind of like it's a necessary evil. It's part of the reason I say I've watched guys start off red hot in camp and then they disappear. I've watched guys have great days, bad days, great days, bad days. I've watched guys be practice All-Americans and then they disappear in a game. And so for me, if you can show up day in and day out, day in and day out. That doesn't mean some days aren't better than others. Some days aren't worse than others. That doesn't mean there's some days when you look forward to watching yourself on film more than others. That's just part of the process. And so if you can find that consistency, it was never as bad, honestly, as I thought it was going to be going into camp. It was always a little bit overblown. And then I'd get into camp. You get to a certain point, you get used to it. You look forward to the night meetings where players are making fun of coaches. You got the rookie show. And like, some of the real team bonding happens in night meetings after supper when you're going to watch film, and some of the hilarity ensues. And so for me, I would always end up enjoying camp more than I originally thought, but I always saw it as a necessary evil. You want to, and you know, some things change as time goes on, but as a general rule, you want to get a good job. You got to get a good education. You got to study. So if you want to have those things, you've got to go through what some people might see as a necessary evil. Those of us who didn't enjoy studying, there are things I love in this world, and that was not one of them, but I always saw it as this is my chance to get better. And guys are going to fall by the wayside. And if I can play well consistently day after day, I will separate myself at the most difficult time of the year. And so that's how I always viewed it.
Love that.
Well, you may have already answered a question just judging by your last story there, but I know this is kind of broad. You've seen and done a lot of things with the Huskers over the years. Do you have a specific memory from your days of playing that jumps out that's your favorite? Something funny story, anything like that?
Oh, well, him calling us pussies is not my favorite story, that's for sure. I've got, man, it's funny because I've got a lot of stories and I try to sparingly share them on my own show because I don't want to blow through them. And now sure, what do I talk sure, about sure. for the next 5 to 10 years? I don't know. Some of my favorite stories were times like in those meetings at night, when the hard work has been put in and you have someone who gets up and they're mimicking a coach or they're actually like going through film and they're kind of like not really critiquing you, but acting like what the coach would do. Or, you know, you get a hold of a freshman and you shave their hair so it looks all crazy. This is acceptable hazing, nothing too crazy. It's yeah. those shenanigans that happen and that separate it and make the locker room really unique from everything else. When I think about what I miss of football, I miss football. I miss playing in front of the fans. And I miss those little moments that you go to a meeting, you're getting ready to go out to practice, and somebody starts cracking a joke on this guy, and then they crack back, and then they're going back and forth, and all of a sudden one guy goes too far, and this guy starts to get heated. Everybody has to hop in. And then the guy who got really mad realizes, oh, I shouldn't be so mad, and everyone just starts laughing. Like, those are the things that always stood out to me and are things that to this day that I probably actually miss the most.
Yeah, I have a coworker here just to kind of piggyback off of that. He worked in the equipment room. He was a manager back in your playing days.
Okay.
I wonder if there's any truth to this or not, but he said he could see you throw a football 90 yards while you were wearing pads. And he's convinced that if you took the pads off, you could throw it 100, the length of the field. Is that true or not? He's always telling me. Adam Carriker could launch the freaking ball.
So the actual, it's close. I appreciate that he gave me the benefit of the doubt and then some. I'll take it. You know, 90 with pads. All right. So the actual story. So I actually grew up. I always thought baseball was going to be my sport. Like I as a sophomore in high school, I threw 95. I was a quarterback all the way growing up.
Whoa.
And I actually got more offers as a quarterback coming out of high school than I did DN. Nebraska actually looked at me at one point and said, you're not good enough to play here as a DN. And I was not an option quarterback. So that wasn't even an option, no pun intended. And so long story short, how I ended up at Nebraska, but I always thought this thing was going to be how I made my living or did past high school. I ended up tearing the UCL right here, which is basically Tommy John surgery. Ended up not doing that. Started to get football letters say, and so I didn't need the surgery to play football. I could lift and hit people. And so that's how I ended up playing football. But it was interesting. I could never throw a baseball the same. I did that the end of my sophomore year. Last game we played, I felt the arm pop. Oof. And so took an entire year. I didn't throw at all for a baseball. Came back, tried to pitch first game my senior year. Here's how bad it went. It went so bad that when I was done, the coach made it back in. I never the rest of the year asked to go in, and he never brought it up to me. It's just like, no, it was so bad, we're not even going to talk about it. Okay, so that's how affected my pitching was. But the funny part was, when I talked to the doctor, I said, I'm not going to do the UCL surgery, so I understand I can't pitch in baseball anymore, but I'm the quarterback on the high school team, and I got 2 years left. I'm going to be a junior and senior. He goes, it won't affect how you throw a football. And I was like, what? And so the way you throw a baseball is a lot more whiplash motion. As right. a football, it's right here.
Right.
So there's a lot less stress on the elbow. And much to my shock, he was right. Never once did it ever affect how I throw a football.
Wow.
Well, I played quarterback my junior, senior year, and I continued to get offers as a quarterback. Obviously, I went to Nebraska as a DN, but I would watch our starting quarterback at the time, and I wouldn't say anything, and he wasn't throwing the great. And he started talking trash to me one day because he heard I was a pitcher and quarterback in high school. And I was like, Joe, I guess you can figure out who it is now. I was like, Joe, you are not talking trash to me. Like, no. And he would not shut up. I was like, all right, we're going to do this throwing competition. And so we did. I'd seen him throw. I knew what I could do. It wasn't even close. Okay. At one point, he was getting booed by the entire team, actually. And so once he was out of the picture, I'd never thrown a ball over 84 yards because I always wanted to reach 85. I could never get there. It was always 84. So I was like, all right, it's today the day. And I was in a walking boot. I had sprained my ankle. And so I'm in a walking boot. I'm not in pads, but I'm in a walking boot and I just keep scooting back. And in fact, Barney Cotton comes out of the south tunnel because that's where our locker room was at the time. And the ball went right by his head because he walked right on the field right as I was throwing, went right by his head. And he looked, what the heck was that? So, again, I never got 85, but I got 84 again that day. That was apparently my all-time limit. But that's the actual true story. But I do appreciate the benefit of the doubt of 90 with pads.
90 with pads on.
Bill Bush, actually, when I interviewed him a year or two ago, he's like, did I ever tell you we actually had a meeting about potentially putting you at quarterback with Callahan? And I was like, no. He goes, we actually brought it up in a coach's meeting and we seriously discussed it. The big problem was, how do we get your D-line pads off in time? Because you can't throw with D-line pads. In fact, my high school pads were huge here and tiny here on my right shoulder, which was great because then my right shoulder got beat up, but it was the only way I could throw. And he's like, we ended up not doing it because we had no way to get your D-line pads off quick enough if we needed to bring you in. It was just Hail Mary situation, not to play actual quarterback. Right. My accuracy was not great, but the arm strength was there. But he's like, just for a Hail Mary situation. But the reason we didn't do it, we couldn't figure out, other than just cutting your jersey off, how to get it off quick enough. So that's why I had never heard about it. But at least they had one conversation in a coach's meeting, apparently.
That is freaking incredible. Wild. Awesome.
Oh, Adam Carriker, ladies and gentlemen, phenomenal stories, phenomenal insight. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam. It is a true honor and a privilege to have you join the Comet fans. Check out CarrikerChronicles.com to see all his great stuff, and check out the Carriker Chronicles and Big Ten shows on YouTube. Adam, any final thoughts?
Yeah, check out CarrikerChronicles.com to see the Common Fan podcast and articles that they're writing as well.
Yes,
thanks
sir.
For the opportunity. Thank you for taking a chance on us.
Very much
Absolutely.
Appreciate the
appreciate
partnership.
You. Appreciate you guys doing it.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. All right, Common Fans, check out CarrikerChronicles.com. Check out CommonFan.co. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the newsletter. Now's the time to feed the addiction as we're getting ready to go into another season of Husker football. We will be talking to you again very soon, Common Fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.